Hi, I'm Mary Jo Salter. I'm a new professor in the writing seminars.
Mary Jo, welcome. I'm Elizabeth Tracy, and we're doing this month's Great Ideas. What are we talking about?
We're talking about poetry and, I suppose, how it's taught and how it's written.
Poetry, of course, been with us for quite a long time. What's your current view of poetry and its place in the realm of written material that's out there?
It's interesting you should say written because, of course, it began as a spoken medium, and it is more that way today than it's been in decades, in the sense that there are a lot of poetry readings, there are poetry contests where you have to make it up on the spot. There are different ways also of getting your written work out there because it's not just on the page, it's, of course, on the web.
Would you say that poetry started out first as an oral tradition?
Absolutely. It really began as song. And when we think about the lyric poem, we're thinking about the lyre. So it goes back to Apollo with his lyre. And I think that speaking poetry aloud is one of the most important ways of absorbing what happened in a poem, whether you wrote it or someone else wrote it.
Would you say then that the internet has been a boost to poetry?
It has, because you can click on the title of a poem and hear the poet, him or herself, reading it. Whitman is the first American poet who was recorded, though it's almost impossible to hear that recording. It's so scratchy. But from now on, whoever you are, if you are publishing in one medium or another, there is going to be a way for your readers, long after you're dead, to listen to you.
Sounds like a great legacy.
It is, and I think it's very moving if you've known those people and they're still speaking to you. Somehow, there's something about the immediacy of going to your computer, clicking on something, and suddenly you're listening to Amy Clampett or Joseph Brodsky or whoever.
So I'm assuming that these are a couple of your favorite poets, and I feel certain that you've got to have at least one poem that's memorized in there that you'd like to share. What about your own work?
I often unconsciously memorize what I'm writing. I don't set out to memorize it, but I find that in the process of writing it, you're saying it over and over again. And, well, here's a poem I wrote a very long time ago, 25 years ago. It's called Summer 1983, and it was for my firstborn child. None of us remembers these, the days when passing strangers adored us at first sight, just for living or for strolling down the street, praised all our given names, begged us to smile. You too, in a little while, my darling, will have lost all this, asked for a kiss, we'll give one, and learn how love dooms us to earn love once we can speak of it.
Wow. That was fantastic.
Well, she is a poet now, I'm very happy to say. She's 25, and she herself has an MFA in poetry from Boston University, and she's now teaching creative writing at the National Cathedral School.
Oh, talk about a wonderful legacy.
Well, I feel very happy about it. She's a very good poet herself. It is true that you feel with younger people that they certainly are the future, and it's not just about your own children, it's about students. This notion that poetry just has to be passed on.
I love that. But I'd like you to convince me of that. When you talk to students in the writing seminars, do they come necessarily convinced that poetry is so necessary to the future?
They're more convinced than the rest of society, for sure. They may come into my office and say, I'm pre-med, I want to be a doctor, but I want to write poetry also. And they also know, if you plan to be a doctor, you know you can make a living at it. As a poet, you're unlikely to make a living at it. So all the more important that you value it on its own terms, that you think it's worth doing, even though it's not necessarily the number one thing society is thinking about. I think people really don't know what it's like to be a poet, in the sense that people who don't think it's important think that that's about making money. People who do think it's important may have the misapprehension that what you do is you just think large thoughts all the time and you don't actually have to sort of sit down and do your job and use your rational brain. What writing poetry involves is being open to all sorts of images and forces that are around you and somehow editing them in your brain. And then, at least my way of writing poetry is to write down quickly an idea as soon as I have it so that I won't lose it, but then not to be afraid of altering and shaping after my rational brain is sort of kicked in. So in that way, both the intuitive and the rational part of the brain are being used. And if we want to talk about usefulness, which I don't usually want to think about, it is useful to be using those seemingly opposed parts of the brain.
certainly, to try to get some integration of those. You brought up a very interesting point, and that is that you said it's necessary to distill, and I'm using distill, you didn't, but I'll use that word, the images, the thoughts that come across the transom into poetry. And clearly, poetry is a much sparer form than prose ever is. How do you do that? How do you distill all those images and thoughts that come to you?
Well, I think it changes as you grow older. I think as a very young poet, it probably feels more often bombarded by everything and doesn't know how to hone it down. As you get older, you may have the opposite problem, which is that the same kinds of things get you every time. And you sit down to write a poem and you think, oh, I actually have written 5 poems about a clock, or I've compared a clock to the moon before. I didn't realize I had this repetitive, obsessive thought. But when I'm lucky enough to have a new thought or a new observation, I think I can't really proceed without likenesses. And I'm using that word rather than imagery because imagery sometimes implies only the visual. What I'm trying to do is to think and feel with all of my senses and to make connections between experiences that are across my senses. I'm really talking about synesthesia. A sound can be a color, that sort of thing. That image, I don't have to keep it in there just because I like it. I can use it again somewhere else.
So synesthesia, it takes me a bit to trip over that one. Would you also describe poetry then as a synthetic kind of art form?
Yes, that's a really good point, because going beyond the synthesis of the senses, but the synthesis of what is felt and what is thought, and between culture, which we are born into and unconsciously are reflecting, and the individual, which is sui generis. I mean, there's no way that we can read or write poetry without being a product of our time. And that's okay. There's a way in which we have to find our own selves within that context, which we were born into.
How would you say that for the students you interact with now, poetry informs their existence and their experience of the contemporary culture?
Well, there's a kind of paradox here, because we do want poetry to be reflective of culture, and we don't want to feel outside of culture when we're reading, as if we're the last person ever to read a poem. On the other hand, our culture right now, for all of us, including poets, is one whose features all have to do with sped up time, simultaneity, multitasking, all of these things that we do on a computer. I am writing a poem right now, let's say, but I've also got my 2 different email accounts in little windows behind it, and I know they're there. And of course, distractions always existed, but I think it is harder to concentrate on only one thing today. And I'd like to believe, I don't know if it's true, but I'd like to believe that the practice of writing poetry, even if you're never going to be a professional poet, just the experience of writing and focusing would spill over into your powers of concentration in other ways. What we need to know about poetry is that although it's great that we have so many new ways of getting it, we still need books. And not just because I want to sell books or I want you to buy my friend's books, but because there is nothing like sitting quietly in a room with that object for enhancing your attention.
And so for your students, what's the central message?
What is the central message? That's a really good question. Okay, so number one would be read. Next would be pay attention, which is another version of read. I suppose read is a subset of pay attention. We can't get at experience without paying attention in a way that is not our own cliched way of paying attention. We all fall into habits of the kinds of things we notice. I happen to notice what people wear. My husband happens to notice whether he's driving east or west, something I wish I paid attention to, but I don't. So one of the values for poetry to me is that a poet may write about things that I have paid attention to in my life, but I never thought they were for writing a poem about.
Very good. Mary Jo, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just that I'm honored to talk with you. Thank you for having me, and I just want to say I'm glad that poetry is coming back.